one of the most brutal executions and slaughters in all of medieval history took place from the 15th of July onwards. And it wasn't a one-day event because there were no bombs back then. There was no nuclear weapon, you press the button. There were no missiles that come in from apartheid regimes. No, the way you kill people back then was one person at a time via the sword. For days, Muslims were tied up, lined up, families put. They stood there and they slaughtered every single human being who lived in the city. More than 100,000 innocent lives were lost over the course of a week. The chroniclers who record the event, they mention with pride that the streets of Jerusalem are filled with blood. One of them mentioned the blood reached his ankles as he's walking in the streets. Another European chronicler visited Jerusalem 1 year later, and he said the stench of the bodies and of the rotting corpses after a year was so bad that he had to cover his nose with his sleeve as he walked into the city.
The story of the Crusader fixation and occupation of Bayt al-Maqdis is a highly significant chapter in the long history of contestation in the Holy Land. The contours of events in this most substantial Crusader era are widely understood. Pope Urban II declared a crusade on the Muslim world in 1095, a pronouncement akin to the call to a medieval world war. By 1099, its recruits, fired up with the cross and conceptions of the significance of the Holy Land, stood at the gates of Jerusalem. On the 15th of July, 1099, Masjid al-Aqsa fell from Muslim hands for the first time since Sayyidina Umar radiallahu anh's liberation in a most dreadful fashion.
You think it's bad today? I keep telling people, for 90 years, this place was a palace. There was no adhan taking place here. No buzz of the Quran being read. These walls were crying out for the Quran to be recited, for the dhikr of Allah to be made. Nothing. A gold cross was on the Qubbat al-Sakhra. Next door, that Marwanids made stables. That's what happened here for over 90 years. You couldn't come into this city.
With the occupation of Al-Quds, the first phase of the crusade resulted in the establishment of four crusader states in the eastern Mediterranean. News concerning the fall of Al-Quds sent shockwaves throughout the Muslim world. However, the process of revival and reclaiming Al-Aqsa was slow and painful, and it confronted many losses and betrayals along the way. The struggle started coming of age decades after the fall of Bayt al-Maqdis with the ascension of the Zangid dynasty in Iraq. Imad ad-Din Zangi managed to recapture the occupied state of Edessa from the Crusaders in 1144. His son Nur ad-Din then kept up the fight after him. Nur ad-Din managed to unite the great Syrian cities of Damascus and Aleppo and also managed to gain a foothold in Egypt. Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi then arose, cementing the custodianship of Egypt and reaping the fruits of struggle made by Nur ad-Din and all other committed servants of the cause prior. He extended his realm to Damascus and soon annexed Aleppo and Mosul. After many frustrating years of striving to unite the Muslim front, when he achieved a measure of success here, he finally turned his full attention to the Crusaders. He struck the occupiers a tremendous blow at Hittin in July 1187. And thereafter attained the crown of his endeavors with the liberation of Masjid al-Aqsa in October of the same year. In our exploration of this chapter, we seek to highlight the pertinent lessons and parallels of this period with contemporary struggles and to appreciate the process rather than just the outcome of revival.
This took place 1099. Most of us, we just jumped to 1187. What happened in 1187? Salah ad-Din Ayyubi, the Battle of Hittin. But how many years between 1099 and 1187? 89 years. What was that interim like? What happened during that time frame? So much, if we don't understand the circumstances that created Salah ad-Din, we're going to assume Salah ad-Din is going to come from the heavens, a miracle, and then things happen. No, it doesn't work that way. So many instances laid the foundations for Salah ad-Din Ayyubi.
The ebb and flow in Muslims' progress or decline, victory or defeat, and civilization or backwardness are intrinsically related to the extent of their commitment to or abandonment of Allah's law. when defeat befalls the believing party, there must be a gap in the essence of their faith, either in their morals or their actions. And the bigger the gap, the more grievous the temporary defeat is. This was precisely the case in the 11th century, which produced circumstances that made Muslim lands ripe for the plucking. The Islamic Khilafah became increasingly weaker as a result of a fragile connection to Allah, lack of strict application of the Sharia, weakness of rulers, and their preoccupation with different means of entertainment and luxury, and the spread of misguided ideas and deviant groups in the Islamic Empire.
The Khalif becomes more symbolic, and the rule is transferred to various different smaller dynasties who are governing in the name of the Abbasids. For 100 years, the area of Bayt al-Maqdis is under Fatimid rule. During this period, the Sunni Muslims were persecuted, and he said there was very little Islamic knowledge in the city and even inside al-Masjid al-Aqsa, and the fuqaha were abandoned, and there was not much for them.
In addition, Muslim scholars were going through a period of impasse and imitation, which prevented them from solving many of the problems and issues facing Muslims in an evolving age. There were a multiplicity of doctrinal differences, increasing sectarian fanaticism, and formation of three different caliphates instead of one: the Abbasid in the east, the Shia Fatimid in Egypt, and the Umayyads in Andalus. The Crusaders achieved their inroads at a time when the Muslim regions in Sham, Iraq, and others were torn apart by bloody disputes and conflicts. Even brothers were jostling with each other for control and influence.
The ruler of Aleppo at the time, his name has been recorded in history as somebody who nobody admires him. His name was Ridwan or Ridwan. And in fact, when the Crusaders were coming in to attack Palestine, Ridwan was engaged in a civil war with his own blood brother. And as the Crusaders are marching in, two blood brothers, they're having a war between them, and the Crusaders are marching in. Who's going to attack them when you're fighting each other? Ridwan had actually signed treaties with the local Crusader dynasty, paying them gold so that they don't attack his principality. You think normalization is new? It goes back. Nothing new.
During the siege of Antioch, the Fatimids send a delegation to meet with the Crusaders and to invite them to work together against the Seljuks, based on that the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
This status quo impressed on the true Muslim leaders and revivalists of this period that achieving liberation would not be a quick fix military solution, but would require deep-seated reform. There were indeed large numbers of Muslims, but they lacked efficient leadership. On the other hand, there were fewer numbers of Crusaders, but they were more trained, organized, and professional. It should be appreciated that jihad against the Crusaders commenced from the earliest days of occupation, but it did lack organization. The Muslims lacked a powerful base that could be used as a permanent launching pad for jihad. More often than not, the battles were in the form of a single Muslim city or castle trying to defend itself or expand against the Crusaders. Still, these early individual efforts are never to be trivialized in the momentum they created towards the eventual liberation of Al-Aqsa.
And so Mosul was under threat. And so the Seljuk Sultan sent one of the military leaders and generals, his name is Maudud, to protect Mosul. Maudud was also successful. In fact, Maudud was so successful, he went further down south and he began to engage with actual fortresses until finally he engaged in one of the most famous battles of this time frame, the Battle of Sanabra, which took place with the King of Jerusalem, King Baldwin. And believe it or not, he won. This is six decades before Salah ad-Din, way before Salah ad-Din. Maudud's goal was to liberate Aqsa. Most of us have never heard of his name. But I am telling you, without Maudud, we wouldn't have had the trajectory.
There's a shining example in the stalwart ulama of the time who did not settle for inaction based on the apathy and treachery of political leaders. Rather, they took the initiative.
You see, during times of fitna, during times of war, during times of grief, during times of struggle, some scholars, and I'm not blaming them, they want to withdraw into their bubbles of teaching. And they say, you know, this is not our stuff. I'm not going to criticize them. But others realize they have a responsibility. Others realize if the rulers aren't doing something, then the ulama have to make the people feel something. Along with the mini battles, you also had great ulama who wanted to keep the spirit of Al-Aqsa alive. Ibn Asakir, one of the greatest scholars of that time, again from Damascus, wrote a number of treatises about the fada'il of Aqsa. That's why he's known. If any of you students of Islamic studies, when you hear Ibn Asakir, you associate him with history. Do you know why he talked about history? He wanted to keep the memory of Aqsa alive. While there seems no hope, there is no light, the scholars have to do something to keep that light alive.
His ulama showed that sometimes drastic and unconventional action needs to be taken to shake up a society.
Zainul Islam al-Harawi, the chief qadi of Damascus, decided he will go back to Baghdad and try his best to get the Khalifa to rescue Masjid al-Aqsa. He enters Baghdad, but the Khalifa's staff basically says, he doesn't have time for you. You're not going to meet the Khalifa. Tries, nothing happens. On Friday, when the khutbah is being given, he walks into the crowd in the largest masjid of Baghdad. Everybody is listening to the khatib. He walks straight to the front of the masjid. And it is Ramadan. And he turns around, takes some bread, and he eats in front of everybody. Now, what's going to happen in a Muslim community if you eat in the day of Ramadan? What's going to happen? Chaos. The people stood up. Have you gone mad? How dare you? Astaghfirullah. You're eating in the masjid in the daylight of Ramadan. Have you lost your mind? And he said to them, you are getting angry at me for eating a piece of bread in Ramadan. But where are your emotions when Aqsa is on fire? Where is that rage? Where is this anger? You get angry at a Muslim for eating in the Nahar of Ramadan, in the day of Ramadan, and 150,000 people have been killed. Where is your anger now? Everybody's silenced. Subhanallah, what? Like, he's making the point here.
When coherent structures to confront the Crusaders started taking shape, the imperative of unity and territorial contiguity took on added importance. Those who stood in the way of this unification needed to be confronted, even if they were of one's own.
Nuruddin, he had a plan of action. It was in three parts. Number one, to unify Sham. Sham was divided, Syria, between Aleppo and Damascus. And they realized there's no way you could defeat the Crusaders with a divided Syria, because the Crusaders would come and just pick it off. Number two was defeat of the Fatimid Shia in Egypt, because they would oftentimes ally themselves with the Crusaders against the Muslims. And number three, the reconquest of Jerusalem.
Salah ad-Din, you might think, why is Salah ad-Din so adamant on fighting Muslim rulers before fighting the Crusades? Salah ad-Din was afraid that these Muslim rulers would go and align themselves with the Crusaders and strike him from his back. Salah ad-Din wanted a united Muslim front. You cannot stand face to face with the Crusaders while your back is exposed.
The efforts towards unification highlighted the strategic importance of Egypt, as well as the need for readiness to confront counter-revolutionaries.
The Crusaders, when they realized that Salah ad-Din will unite Syria and Egypt, they were pretty afraid, because they knew if there is unity in the first circle around the Holy Land, then the end of this foreign state in the heart of the Muslim world will not continue. And this reminds us of what happened in Egypt when the general elections in Egypt brought around Morsi. And Morsi, when Gaza was attacked, opened the borders with Gaza and allowed all the aid to go through. Israel didn't like this. For this reason, he was toppled. Israel supported Sisi.
To achieve military victory, it was also acknowledged that revival needs to be broad-based, incorporating education, culture, economic development, and military strength. The likes of Nur ad-Din built madaris and masajid, fought bid'ah and misleading ways. As a result, iman and ilm spread in the society. This also revived the characteristic of respecting and revering the ulama. On the military front, Salahuddin mastered the fundamental principles of war with great efficiency. These included the principle of surprise, the principle of security with his strong and efficient spying network, the principle of swift movement whereby the army could move, assemble and relocate in a quick manner. There was also striking first and projecting offensive power, and the principle of a strong economy, allocating appropriate resources to each battle.
He began to establish schools. Everyone's united against the Muslim, and Salah ad-Din is establishing schools. Yes, Salah. Salah knew what he was doing. Salah ad-Din was establishing schools because he knew the generations needed to know their Islam.
On a personal level, those who played the most important role in liberating Al-Aqsa from the Crusaders all adopted Islam as an ideology and approach, as well as means for mobilizing against the usurping enemy. They were fully committed to Islam and its rulings, and had the integrity of Iman and a strong connection with Allah.
Sheikh Abul Hasan Nadwi rahmatullah alayh, defining Salahuddin, he says, "Kana mu'minan musliman muhammadiyan la ya'rifu ghayra lughatil Qur'an." He said, Salahuddin was a Muslim. He was a Muhammadi. He was a mu'min. The only language that he understood was the language of the Quran. The only language that he understood was the language of Islam and Iman.
It was on this foundation that the Ummah at the time made progress from an abyss of utter disgrace to the pedestal of liberating Al-Aqsa in less than 100 years. After the Battle of Hittin and the Siege of Al-Quds, the Muslims liberated the holy city on the 27th of Rajab 583, corresponding with the 2nd of October 1187, 88 years, 2 months and 17 days after it was captured by the Crusaders. In the echoes of the Fath al-Umari, the occasion was coloured by forgiveness and no blood of the Christians was spilt. Religious rights of all would be protected under the renewed Muslim dispensation. New musallas were laid and carpets were hung. Mushafs of the Quran were brought in wooden boxes. And for the first time in 88 years, Adhan was again heard at the first Qibla and Salah was re-established. The fruits of a sincere and directed program of revival was reaped. A program, if its lessons are taken heed to, can bring rejuvenation and victory in any era.
The liberation of Jerusalem was not really the work of one man.
Right.
Yes, Salah ad-Din led the army and his efforts, Muslims do remember with pride. And gratitude, but that was a generational change that started 100 years earlier. Your enemies look at you and they see signs of decline, they see signs of fragmentation, of decay, so they jump on you and they probably manage to defeat you, but that's not the end of the story. The secret with the Muslims is not something to do with race or ethnicity or geography. It's to do with the mission. And the mission is eternal, and the mission is preserved. Inna nahnu nazzalna dhikra wa inna lahu lahafidun. No matter how low we decline at a certain time, we have the mechanism, we have the ability to come back.
Yes.
And this is what happened during the time of Salahuddin Ayyubi, and this is what's happening at the moment.